The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning, too. It is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However, you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada at the D. And let me just say this, Kelly, to start the show. Not only is the casino empty, not only is the drive into work empty, there is nobody in town. There's nobody here. 120 degrees a couple days ago will do that, I guess.
It is bizarre. Like, yesterday I was kind of thinking, is this still part of, like, the holiday weekend hangover, or is it just the heat? And I think it's just the heat.
It's the heat. People look at the temperature, and they're like, oh, no, I'm not doing that.
Having said that, that was kind of nice. I think me and you were both out running errands after the show yesterday. There was, like, nobody around.
A little eerie.
You know, it was nice from, like, I was in the grocery store and nobody's in the grocery store, right? But eerie from, especially when we were here in this city during COVID in a pandemic, and it felt a little like that yesterday.
You're like
driving in today, like you said, I'm like, well, I'm the only person on the road.
Yeah.
Except for the cop who pulled me over for a speeding ticket. Thank you, officer.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah.
This morning?
Yep.
Come on. Where? On the freeway?
No, on Las Vegas Boulevard, like 5 minutes after I pulled out of my place.
Wait, what were you driving in a what? In a what limit?
I mean, it was 45. I was going like 55.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Down by the South Point, down that direction?
Yeah, down by the outlets there.
Wow, Kelly Bidlin.
A motorcycle cop.
Breaker
only my
of the
second
law.
Ticket in Nevada. Only my second ticket. That's big. I got a lot in Florida. So
I've only gotten the one. That was where I had the Larry David discussion with. I go, while I have you here, could you do something about the stuff flying off the trucks? He's like, you're more of a menace than those guys are. I'm like, okay,
forgot about that truck there.
Thanks, officer. Appreciate the help.
That was scary that one day. You know, right? There was the one truck that had a bunch of stuff fall off the back of it.
Oh,
right?
I still have the ding in the car. Yeah.
That's scary. It.
All right, back to the business at hand. Drew Dinsick joins us to talk. We got to get some more Olympics plays from him today, more Olympics thoughts. If he's got anything left in Wimbledon today. I have Lulu Sun in this match against Donna Vekic, and Lulu Sun won the first set. She dropped the second one, and now apparently can't even get points in the third, down 3-love. So that took a turn as we were trying to continue good vibes of the last couple days, but we'll see. We'll see what happens there with Lulu. The New Zealander, the Kiwi. I have one other play today. I have Emma Navarro. Navarro minus 2.5 games against Jasmine Paolini. So I got that still to come later on in the second of the ladies' quarters today.
I'm tailing you on that one.
See, Emma?
I feel like just the random, you know, 45 minutes I've probably seen of her through matches. Man, is she impressive.
Well, like you said, you know, if she loses, she has a $1.5 billion to fall back on, so it'll be all right for you.
I did notice I meant to text you this the other day. I guess I always assumed, or I've assumed, that the doubles, a lot of these people that play in doubles, I assume it's because it's kind of for an easy paycheck alongside of what they do with their singles action. That might be unfair to judge. Obviously not for Jessica Pegula, though, right? Isn't her and Coco Gauff playing together in the doubles?
They always play doubles together.
So, yeah. That's important to her.
Some people believe in it. Some people don't. Like, some people still love playing doubles. Maybe they have a relationship with the person they're playing with, and they don't want to stop playing also, and others, you know, just don't. John McEnroe.
Yeah, I figured it was an easy paycheck. That's why.
Back in the day, John McEnroe played doubles the whole way through while he was winning singles championships.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
With Peter Fleming back in the day, famously. All right, so besides Drew, Paul Carr, obviously, on a couple soccer semis, a couple tournaments of semis, both in the Euros 2024 and Copa America. Those begin tonight in both. I like how they're concurrently scheduled for Tuesdays and Wednesdays, both of the semis. We'll do that. We'll talk to Paul Sporer on baseball. We'll also have Pete Futak in, get his college football thoughts here in mid-July as we head towards the college football season. It'll get here eventually, I promise. First, though, we want to talk about some of the stuff we didn't get to with Cleve yesterday. Cleve TA on Twitter, great NFL follow, has his own little NFL preview guide, which is really succinct and has some good nuggets in there. We'll get to Coach of the Year coming up later because we want to do a deep dive on that and sort of go through some candidates that qualify. But what he did that I like was that he came up with parameters for this is who has won this award in the past. They had to have these qualities, or this out of this many of them had these qualities, these characteristics, just like that NCAA championship formula that is tried and true that I do every year. So here are a few NFL MVP trends that, again, when we talk about these awards moving forward, preseason, during the season, whatever, we should keep in mind. When I say we, I'm talking about me. Like, we should always keep these in mind, anyone talking about this. So 11 straight MVPs and 16 of the last 17 have been quarterbacks. So, again, the notion that an MVP can go to someone who is not a quarterback is kind of, we're just talking. Again, 11 straight have been quarterbacks. 16 of the last 17 have been quarterbacks. And those teams have averaged over 13 wins per season. Think about that for a second. So there's no quarterback from a team squeaking into the postseason. There's no quarterback on a fourth seed, right? You've just got to be top of the heap in everything. Now, no MVP has either, by the way, continuing in the last 16 seasons, come from a team with less than 11 wins. Sort of corroborating the first one. Now, if you look at the standings last year and you're like, okay, well, who does that eliminate? It actually doesn't eliminate many of the suspects. Many of the suspects you would point to. I suppose it eliminates C.J. Stroud of the 10-win Texans. That one, I guess. but that's about it, because everybody else, right? We're talking about Bills, Dolphins, Ravens, Browns, Chiefs, Cowboys, Eagles, Lions, Niners, they all won at least 11 games last year.
That is a little absurd. It is, yeah. It is 16 straight of 11-plus wins. Wow.
With an average of 13 wins per season. Also, the average preseason win total, so the pre-flop win total for these teams, this is also a part of this, has been 10 wins with a floor of 8.5 wins. So think about that for a second. If your season win total is less than 8.5 wins, you're a player on a team with a season win total of less than 8.5 wins, you're not winning this. This is for the last 10 times now. Since the year 2000, these go back to, pardon me. So again, the average preseason win total for these teams have been 10 wins with a floor of 8.5 wins. So your season win total hovers around 10, can't be lower than 8.5. So, I'm thinking, who does that eliminate? Justin Herbert, perhaps? Right? Oh, no, it's right at 8.5, right? He's 8.5. So he could get in there. Justin
right
Herbert
there,
could get in there. But, again, had a team with less than 11 wins last year. We'll get to coach of the year and how that plays in later. So these are things. I just want to add one advanced stat to this as well, because he had a bunch more for NFL MVP. But I just want to add one of them, one other bullet point, because for analytics folks, of the last 12 MVP quarterbacks, none generated a negative EPA per dropback in the season prior to winning. Lamar Jackson at 0.00 in 2018 is the worst EPA per dropback the season before winning, although it was his rookie year and he only started 7 regular season games. So even he was a bit of an outlier, even counting him. The average EPA per dropback, that's expected points, right? Not expected points, but... Expected points added per dropback of the last 12 MVP quarterbacks has been plus 0.18. So you ask yourself, all right, when you're tracking this the coming year, think about that the person with the best EPA per dropbacks has to hover around plus 0.18. You've got to be in the positive. But as far as looking back at this past year, who had a negative EPA per dropback? Because according to these parameters, you can't really be part of this. So digging into that a little bit here, Kelly, looking up that, the number one EPA per dropback last year belonged to Brock Purdy, 0.31. Dak was 0.28. Trevor, 0.27. Josh Allen, 0.24. Tua, Stafford, Cousins, Carr, Jake Browning, and Jordan Love rounding out the top 10. How about that? Jake Browning's still a backup in Cincinnati.
I'm just going down the MVP odds right now, trying to that 8.5 win total floor. It is interesting because you've got nobody. All win totals are higher until you hit you know, Herbert, like you brought up, Anthony Richardson, Trevor Lawrence, but all those guys right at 8.5 is basically where the win total set at for those teams. I think there's what, you know, one guy I want to bring up because I know Matt Brown's brought him up. I know I've heard multiple other people bring him up too. And it's he kind of fits right in here, even though you might not think of him as one of the best in the league. It is Jared Goff for the Detroit Lions, right? Like he checks all these boxes, and he's been a popular offseason MVP bet, I think, because of that.
He's been a hugely popular MVP bet to the point where I would say, have we lost our minds about Jared Goff a little bit? That's the only thing I would say. Cleve points out for that. On along those lines about Jared Goff, for everybody who's on the Jared Goff hype train, the only issue with that is that he was what? You know, last year, Detroit won 12 games. He finished second in the NFL in yards. He finished fifth in touchdowns. And he didn't even get a sniff for MVP last year. So think about that. I mean, that's a – now, I don't know what that is about – you know, about the Detroit Lions. It's just the perception. He's a system quarterback. He throws, by the way, at the seventh lowest rate in neutral situations if you want to get into advanced stats. But just even in the conventional stats that most voters are likely to gravitate towards, again, they won 12 games. You know, as I mentioned, fifth in touchdowns last year, second in NFL in yards, didn't get a sniff. So what makes you think that he's such a good bet for this year moving forward? Even if he gets those same numbers, is everybody going to all of a sudden be like, oh, Jared Goff?
I think they could. I think a little bit of it, though, is you're right. I think it's perception of him. I think it's perception of Dan Campbell, right? Like, yeah. Dan Campbell, I think, gets a lot of the credit for that team's success.
We'll do this for Coach of the Year coming up, and we'll actually go through all the candidates that qualify and who among them might be a good bet. We'll do that. Drew Dinsick on the other side, though. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month. And lucky for you, the VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get instant access to comprehensive team profiles with power ratings and win total predictions. Proven betting systems and trends like how to win with our betting splits. Plus top picks for season win totals, futures props, and awards like MVP and Rookie of the Year. To access this invaluable guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, though. For a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. Get a full year of VSiN Pro for just $199 instead of the usual $240. And as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That's 13 months of access to everything VSiN offers, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this fantastic offer. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code ANG.
Promo code ANG like ANG.
To get 13 months of VSiN Pro for only $199, gain instant access to our NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe with promo code ANG. Well, you know what I have proven really good at? Finding players whose tank just empties. And apparently it emptied for Lulu Sun after she won the first set. Didn't win the second. She broke back to make it 4-5, but she couldn't hold. She loses that, and then she had nothing in the third set. And so she gets trounced 6-1. Drew Dinsick joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line at @whale_capper. You can follow him on both of his podcasts, of course, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor and NBC Sports Bet the Edge pod with Jay Croucher. He joins us this morning from the LBC with his fish tank behind him. How you doing, Drew?
You know, just trying to make something out of this just atrocious Wimbledon. The degree, and you know, this is set aside the betting part of this because I've had some betting Wimbledons that were just like true chaos, like you know, couldn't find a winner to save my life type of stuff. I'm referring more to the entertainment factor. Like this time of year, you know, a lot of cool European sports going on, a lot of sports in the middle of the beginning of the day. You know, Wimbledon, of course, is it, you know, it holds a special place among anyone who cares about tennis. But the entertainment factor this year has just not been there. Part of it is obviously the rain. I thank you, by the way, to ESPN for all of the extended rain shots instead of key points.
Yes,
appreciating
thank you.
That. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, I'd rather watch rain shots of Wimbledon, I guess, than commercials. Like, they missed the entire break of serve to start the fourth set of Alcaraz Umber the other day, and I was just pulling my hair out. Like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, it's just at a commercial break, and like the entire match is being decided, and we're not seeing it. But that's fine. The entertainment factor has been pretty wanting here, and part of it is, you know, the men's side. We've kind of been waiting for the high leverage matches to get here, and that's starting today. I mean, the Sinner Medvedev match is pretty fascinating, and for even down 1-0. Circling now his first set, Medvedev feels like the much better player in this. And I have some Sinner outrights from pre-tournament. I was mostly keeping my powder dry to bet him against Alcaraz and bet him against Djokovic. But watching this right now, I think Sinner looks like he is dangerously close to running out of gas. He at least looks the more tired of these two players. And Sinner, Medvedev, for what it's worth, like, his skill set has always been very, very kind of similar to Djokovic. We always kind of joke that it's Joker light for Medvedev. And he was off my radar for this tournament just because his serve has been kind of broken. The double faulting cost him the first set here. But I think there's a decent chance to get some Medvedev in not just this match, but to do some damage here long term.
Meanwhile, Djokovic, yeah, clinical yesterday against Rune. He looks great.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was against Rune, so yeah. He hasn't shown us anything in so long, I can't even remember. But Djokovic has been strong. I think the rumors of his demise were greatly overstated, and it's going to be opponent dependent how you treat that final. I don't think there's anyone. You know, Demon Hour has been fine on grass in particular this in the run-up to this tournament, and he's looked good in this tournament, but he is the type of player that's consistently wilts against the likes of the Djokovic's of the world. So I'm fine putting Djokovic through to the semifinals, where he likely takes down Taylor Fritz. And then things get interesting, because between Sinner, Medvedev, Alcaraz, and Paul, you know, they're one of those four guys is going to be the biggest test of the tournament for Djokovic. And, there are still things, you know, you look at a scoreline or you look at the way he wins points or wins sets, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, this is classic. But his movement is very, very different than I remember on grass. And in general, like, he's very busy. You know, he's still favoring the knee and in the way he's setting up shots. And I think the right opponent could take advantage of that to the degree that it's at least a match in the final. So I get that Djokovic is still very likely to be your finalist, which means he has a very decent chance to win this title. I'm probably going to be against him in that final, depending on the form of the player coming through. Now, it is set up nicely that you could have a player that limps in, right? Like, yeah. If Sinner gets by Medvedev here today, but kind of goes five, and then, you know, has to go to war with Alcaraz, and then, you know, limps into the final on Sunday, then yeah, he's ripe to get upset. You know, he's ripe to not show up, not to be the force I was hoping. And similar could be said for Alcaraz or Medvedev for that reason. So I think we're a long way from understanding who's going to win the men's side, and then the women's side is just
bigger question.
Yeah, dude, last year we were in awe and just dumbstruck of Marketa Vondrousova running to the title. Like, I mean, Rybakina is probably still going to win, and that was a lot of people's picks pre-tournament, so it's not going to shock the world. But everybody else who's at this stage is like, huh? Yeah. What? Lulu Sun? Who? I know that that there were a ton of withdrawals, there were some illnesses, there's some, you know, that, but there, you know, there's been
injuries,
some shocking defeats.
Yeah.
Injuries, yeah.
Well, let's start with Iga, yeah. Right? Let's start with Iga, who said after her match, she just completely had nothing left in the tank. She now knows she shouldn't have done like the off court stuff after the French Open. Like, when someone says, "Well, I just ran out of gas," I'm in a tank. Like, as a handicapper, you just sort of put your palms up in the air. And you're like, okay, sure. I'd love to have known that, but she doesn't do it, and so you do have. And so I don't know what your thoughts are on that. And then who do you think, if it's not Rybakina, who do you think takes this?
I mean, I still don't really trust Rybakina. She hasn't been tested, so we don't know. But Ostapenko is the easy answer. Like, if you're saying I test who's played the best tennis on grass at this tournament, it's been Yelena. It's funny too, because like she's got the game. She's made the semifinals in her life here. And, you know, she just has kind of lacked sort of the discipline and the mentality and, you know, kind of just loses it at inopportune times throughout her career outside of the one French Open win. And so it's tough to trust a player like that. I had a bunch of, you know, expectation for her to go deep in at the French Open, and she wasn't able to do it. So, you know, there definitely is scars betting Yelena. But that said, she's playing the best tennis on grass of anyone that I've seen on the women's side by margin. And, you know, in general, it seems like her mentality is like in the exact right space. Right. Like she's not overthinking things when she's hitting unforced errors. She's not losing her cool. She's just regrouping and playing the next point with the same aggressiveness. And that's exactly what you want out of her if she's going to make a run to a title here. So Ostapenko, I have as a healthy favorite over Krejcikova here to get to the final. And then at that point, Ostapenko versus presumably Rybakina. And, you know, I'm not entirely dismissing Svitolina. She's been playing very well as well, but not really the type of game that gives Rybakina a difficult time. So I'm fine penciling in Rybakina and Ostapenko as your semifinal and honestly, your de facto final. I don't think whoever comes out of the bottom half of this draw is going to make much of a match of the final. And so that Ostapenko-Rybakina matchup is where I'm the most excited. And you know, just looking at the outright prices, plus 110 on Rybakina versus plus 650 on Ostapenko, no freaking way. Like, that's going to be a match. That is going to be a very close match. And those two ladies should be close, you know, priced somewhat similarly, in my opinion, to win the title overall. So for me, it's Yelena or bust. The bottom half of the draw and the enthusiasm over Navarro right now, I think, is a little overstated. I'm obviously extremely disappointed that Coco Gauff was such a no-show in her match against Emma Navarro, but like
that was your girl.
And boy did the world the path just kind of completely opened up for her, and she kind of had a clear hold of that match early and then just let it slip through her fingers and became an unforced error machine. It was very, very tough to watch, but Emma Navarro is not doing anything that I'm especially impressed by. So, I'm against her today in this match against Jasmine Paolini, who I think is a very underrated player, weirdly. So who knows, but we're Paolini for me today.
We are oppo on that one. And Drew, the way it's been going, that ain't a bad place for you to be. That ain't a bad place for you to be, my friend.
A lot of tennis left.
Oh, no. I've had a good couple days until this morning. Okay. We'll come back. Drew's betting all kinds of things. Tour de France. The Olympics. We'll get his thoughts on those. That's on the other side. Numbers Game Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game, live from Bar Canada at the D, Barcana, the Barrage. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets at Beating the Book, Jeremiah Westgate. Good morning, Gil. Now that we are done with the 4th of July eating exploits, let's focus on Christmas and eggnog. I don't remember the exact amount and time rules, but I do remember I could do it. I want in. I might be willing to up the stakes or make rules harder. I think he's talking to you, Kelly, not me.
I'm never doing that again. I haven't had a sip of eggnog since that thing. It ruined one of my favorite beverages.
I haven't even said the words egg and nog until this moment.
Yeah.
The numbers, guys. Regarding Wimbledon champ 24, guilty believe in Rybakina as little as I do. Vekic for the win for her first major title. Well, we'll see. The Better Life, Tim Lawson. Gonna need Paul Carr's thoughts on this week's Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup matches, along with the Copa and Euros. Big couple days for soccer tourneys. All right, we'll ask him about that. Oh, Professor Shine is now the shiny sports professor as well. Said Goff's Thanksgiving and December 30th losses were both high-profile games when MVP was up for grabs. He beats Dallas in that great game. MVP would have been interesting. Goff at 30-1 or more is a steal for 2024, he says. He disagrees with Cleve. Jesse Welch, you guys would be shocked to know how pumped I am for the Jardiance woman segment this week. Oh, wait, that's tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow.
Oh, the original Jardiance woman on the show. What is her name?
Deanna Colon.
Deanna Colon. We're going to find out if she's related to the great Bartolo Colon. That's the first thing. And then after that, we'll talk about her ouster from the Jardians. Can we call it a franchise? I don't think we can. Yeah. From the Jardians series of commercials where they replaced her with someone else, and now it's some dude in a garden singing.
Some dude in a garden.
I just don't understand.
8:15 a.m. Pacific time.
I am told Deanna Colon has a very good attitude about it all. Very good attitude.
Yeah, she's pumped.
So our whole entire goal for that segment will be to enrage her, to get her angry at the Jardians people. We'll see. Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us once again, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, Whale underscore Capper, Deep Dive Pod, and NBC Sports Bet the Edge Pod. I don't think he has anything to say about the Jardians lady. Maybe he does. But can we get a Tour de France update? I know you said there isn't really a bet here, but that's been the opposite of Wimbledon for you. That's gone well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know what's won the TV battle most mornings over coffee in my household has been the Tour de France over Wimbledon from the entertainment standpoint, because every stage has just been must watch. And I can kind of give you a general sense that the GC, while Tadej Pogacar, our pick to win, is wearing the yellow jersey and does have a meaningful margin on the reason, you know, on his reasonable competition in the GC. The race hasn't really started yet. They only had one mountain stage. In that mountain stage, Pogacar showed that he was the class rider. He put time on his chief rivals in that stage in winning stage four. And then he put time on Vindigo last year's, the two-time defending champ. He put time on Vindigo in stage seven, which was the time trial, but lost to Evenepoel, who's right currently in second place. The major stories so far, because we've only had the one mountain stage, there's been a lot of hilly stages. There's been a lot of flat stages. The French are having a very good Tour de France with a bunch of just rando French guys winning breakaways in stage one, two, and nine so far. And so the French are very happy with the way that this has gone. The sprint stages are really the story so far. And you have to start with stage five, where Mark Cavendish won his 35th stage, which
Cavendish.
Is an all-time record.
Yes.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Like, I watched stages one through four. Cavendish almost got dropped to the point where he had to abandon the race in stage one. Like, he was that far off of the opening group. He just made it in with the time, before the time cut off, where they force you out of the race. And so he stayed in. And by the time they got to stage five, I thought there was very, very little hope he was going to have a chance to win a stage. But he stole five with just an absolutely spectacular sprint at the end. The even more insane story, you have a two-time stage, the only two-time stage winner so far, is Binnen Girmay. And if that's an unfamiliar name, it shouldn't surprise you. He is the first ever Black African to win a stage at the Tour de France ever.
Wow.
And he's done it twice this year. Both of them were spectacular sprints where his team kind of just fell apart and he just went for it and got them both times. And so it was a huge upsets there that Binnen Girmay is your current green jersey winner. I'm going to guess that Binnen Girmay to win the green jersey before pre-tournament was somewhere in the 200-1 range. And right now it looks almost like he's uncatchable with the lead he has over Jasper Philipsen, who was the heavy favorite. I think Philipsen was probably like -200 or something like that to win the green jersey before this tour started. And Girmay is just putting him in the hurt box. My favorite Binnen Girmay story, by the way, he was the first Black African to win a stage at any classic tour, and it was the Giro d'Italia. I believe 2 years ago, he won a sprint stage there. And it was such a momentous moment. They gave him a bottle of champagne to open on the podium. And he opened the bottle of champagne and he shot himself in the eye with the cork.
No. Yeah. I saw that coming.
Had to go to the hospital. He had to abandon the Giro d'Italia after winning the first stage there to come back from that embarrassment and be in France here and to be winning Tour de France stages is really just incredible.
Cavendish, who don't, Mark Cavendish, there's a documentary made about Cavendish called Cavendish. And he was, for those who remember ESPN Streak for Cash, do you remember that game on the ESPN website? He was always a free bingo square. Cavendish to win the sprint, always, every time. He was just a killer on that.
He's got a great story, the Manx Missile. And if you're like, well, what's the Manx Missile? You look him up, you're like, oh yeah, he's Manx. What?
Yeah.
Manx is apparently a race that comes from the Isle of Man. Manx.
Yeah.
It's a specific, group of people that were, born on this tiny island in between Ireland and the UK. And, he's your most successful ever rider, sprinter at the Tour de France. As he now has 35 stage wins.
That was a very comprehensive Tour de France review. Do you have an Olympics bet or two for us?
The Olympics handicapping is going well so far. I'm heavy into this Jamaican sprinter who I think is the world is sleeping on. There's not outrageously good prices anymore on this. It's probably my fault, so apologies. But the world seems to be very, very high on Noah Lyles, who is the top U.S. sprinter in the 100 and 200. I'm against Noah Lyles in both of those races. But the one that I'm the heaviest on right now is Keyshane Thompson. He is an up-and-coming sprinter from Jamaica. The Jamaicans obviously have wildly, huge pedigree in the sprinting events. And I'm surprised that it's taken everybody this long to figure out that Thompson is their guy this year, and he's on the upkick. He's still available in like the 2-to-1 range to win the 100 meters, and I think that's a bet. I think he's gonna be sort of the breakout story of the men's sprinting. And then the medal handicap is also kind of the only thing that I have lots of liquidity opportunities at this moment. And the numbers that I'm, I think the last time we talked, I was high on the U.S. I think we are going to break 40 golds. In particular, the success that our gymnastics women have kind of foretold with their performances at trials is enough to get me involved at over 39.5 for U.S. gold. And the France gold was the one I was scratching my head around. It was over 23.5. And, it doesn't take much digging to kind of figure out where these numbers are coming from and some of the projection systems that are feeding into hanging these totals. And, the expectations for France are so high. I'm probably going to end up taking an under here. The under at one point was -140, and it's gotten bet against. So people are taking bets on the over for France gold to the tune. It's now -120 over 23.5, which, I went through it extremely carefully. They're going to have to win something like 7 gold medals in fencing if they're going to get to 24. It's not a terrible number. Like my initial reaction, because you look at France's performance in Tokyo, they had 11 golds or something like that, or 10. And you're like, okay, they didn't add new events. How are they going from 10 golds to 24? That doesn't make sense. But they had a decent performance overall in Tokyo, and the home cooking for a sport like fencing, or just in general, some of the, kind of random events, like they're going to sweep handball. They're going to take some golds. They may win soccer gold, surely a chance. And then in swimming, I'm counting 4 golds for them in swimming right now, which is pretty pretty intense and a huge upkick from performances in years past. So they could get close, but I still think it's going to come in just under. And so if you want a sweat that'll last 2 weeks, the most fun one on the board right now is France under 23.5. And you're going to wake up and you're going to end up scrolling through fencing results every morning, like, who won the men's team epi? Come on, Netherlands, come on. That's kind of the world I'm setting up for myself in a couple weeks here.
France at 24.5 at DraftKings under -115.
Wait, say that again.
24.5 gold medals for France at DraftKings under -115. So I think Mr. Dinzik would like that.
By the way, just a glossary of terms for letters used, acronyms used earlier in the segment. GC, general classification for the Tour de France. Yep. Just want to point that out. Keyshane Thompson, Kishane, from Jamaica. Keyshane Thompson about 2-to-1 right now. Over in golds for the U.S., under in golds for the French. And again, we'll have to be tracking fencing results. See if that gets home.
Yeah, fencing and fencing and judo.
Drew, you want to give some football opinions on the other side, or you got to bounce?
We'll save that for later.
We'll save it for later.
We got no Wimbledon talk next week. We'll talk football.
We'll do that. Drew Dinzik, everybody. I'm coming back with Coach of the Year thoughts next. Thank you, Drew.
Coach. A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth reviews of all 32 teams with win total projections for every team, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best futures bets from the VSiN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year awards, which we'll get into momentarily. Whether you're a seasoned bettor just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSiN.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. That's VSIN.com/guide. Daniil Medvedev up a break now in set number three, set apiece. And so, advantage. Medvedev, you love, you miss the French umpires, don't you, where they're like, advantage.
Oh, completely. Are you kidding me?
Egalité.
It's not even close. And, you know, at the time, you want to rip on them not using the technology, but it's kind of funny when they get out of the chair and run all the way over.
They just do this with their hand, and they go, sorry. In their French way. Okay. We did this earlier with MVP, but let's do it with a deeper dive, because we really didn't give our thoughts in terms of picks for MVP. But for Coach of the Year, I would like to do that. So here are, going back to Cleve TA's appearance on the show yesterday, here are the criteria that one needs, again, in the same style that we did the whole NCAA championship formula. He has done this for NFL awards. A Coach of the Year is a great case study. So 15 straight winners, 15 in a row, have been on a team with at least 9 wins. So if you finish 8-9, if you finish with a losing record this year, any losing record, doesn't matter where you come from, you just haven't won this. So if the Carolina Panthers go 8-9, which would be a 6-game increase over what they were last year, that would buck this entirely. It wouldn't be enough. 15 straight winners of this award have been on a team with at least 9 wins, talking Coach of the Year. The average preseason win total of the last 15 winners is 7.5 wins. No winner in the last 15 years came into the season with a win total of greater than 9.5. So your win total can't suck, but it can't be too good either, because then you aren't really exceeding expectations by that much, right? So it can't be greater than 9.5. These are the last 15 winners. The number of wins for the team increased by an average of 5.5 games from the prior year. So you really do have to have a spectacular improvement. That one would qualify the Panthers, even though the other one disqualified them. Nearly half of the last 15 winners were first-year head coaches for their team. Okay, so let's put all three of those things into a sort of mix and who it disqualifies, who it applies to. First of all, the disqualifications. What does that mean? So candidates like Kyle Shanahan, John Harbaugh, Dan Campbell, Andy Reid, they're already disqualified because your season win totals are too high.
Yep.
Right? So Dan Campbell winning his division, like, I don't want to hear anybody say, oh, but the Lions win the division and they look like they could win that. He's not going to win Coach of the Year. He's not. Not at least according to these historical trends on these. Now, who does, all those three things we just talked about, all those parameters, who does qualify then? Okay. Let me go to the phone here because, again, syncing problems, Kelly. Apologies. Genius Bar appointment later today, in case you were wondering. By the way, Genius Bar, went there yesterday. I'm like, hey, can I get an appointment? Like, how about an hour and a half or 2 hours from now? Be like, how about no? How about tomorrow?
It's absurd. I haven't been in years.
No.
One of my least favorite places to go. I even warned you yesterday. It's like you have to have an appointment, then you show up for your appointment, and you usually have to wait then, too.
So about a quarter of the...
It's fun.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
Not fun
at all. Then you look around, and you're like, wait, there's like 6 people in here. What am I waiting?
Plus, they're also like, what's your problem? You couldn't figure it out on your own?
Yeah. The geniuses like to talk down to you a bit. Yeah,
they're geniuses. Yeah. They're geniuses, for God's sakes. Yeah. And you're at their bar. okay. About a quarter of the league's coaches qualify under those three guardrails, if you will, that Cleve TA came up with. Those coaches are Jim Harbaugh of the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh of the Chargers, who's, remember, the Chargers last year won 5 games. Their season win total is 8.5. And he's 11-1 to win this at DraftKings. Mike McDonald of the Seattle Seahawks. Not Mike McDaniel, not Michael McDonald, Mike McDonald. We got that right? Seahawks won 9 last year. Season win total this year, 7.5. He's 22-1. Dave Canales of the Panthers. Panthers won 2. Season win total is 5.5. He's 18-1. Again, two of the three for some of these. Jonathan Gannon of the Cardinals. They won 4, the Cardinals did last year. Season win total 7.5. He's 15-1. Shane Steichen of the Colts. They won 9 last year. Season win total is 8.5. He is 16-1. Dan Quinn qualifies on all. Commanders won 4 last year. Season win total 6.5. He's 18-1. Last two, Brian Callahan of the Titans. They won 6 last year. Season win total 6.5. He's 20-1. Kevin O'Connell of the Vikings, which ended up being Cleve's pick, if you recall. Vikings won 7 last year. Their season win total 7.5. He is 25-1. So that's a quarter of the coaches in the league who kind of fit at least two of the three of these situations. Now, there are others, right, that are in there too. But those are 8 that really are in pocket. So of those, Kelly, again, Cleve liked Kevin O'Connell. 25-1. You could still get him at a good number. Yeah. Part of that, of course, is the number at which you get it. But
25-1 at DraftKings right now.
Yeah, 25-1, as I mentioned. But the shortest of those is Harbaugh. Harbaugh's 11-1. I mean, we're not talking that short. By the way, Matt Eberflus, the short shot in all this, at 9-1. Do any of the ones I mentioned stick out to you? I'll tell you the one that's up for me already.
I doubt I'm going to have a bet in this market going into the season. I think that a lot of the names you just rattled through are the ones that make the most sense. I mean, look, I think Jim Harbaugh, it really jumps out. I mean, if that team, you're playing in a division with, I don't expect the Broncos or the Raiders to be very good. I know some people are higher on the Raiders a little bit, but I don't think they're going to be all that great. I think he makes sense, a lot of sense. I think your boy Dan Quinn makes a lot of sense on the Commanders. There's a couple that, like, I think if Kyler Murray or Anthony Richardson, like, they're probably, for those teams to do well, they're probably going to have to have big years. I think a lot of the credit's going to end up going to those quarterbacks in those situations. And not necessarily that matters as much in the NFL, like Coach of the Year, that it would steal away any credit from the coaches, but I always have that in the back of my mind at least. So I think a couple I would be most interested in, Harbaugh and Dan Quinn, but I don't imagine I'm going to have a bet.
And I see eye to eye on this. The first coach that I went to was Mike McDonald of the Seahawks, because I actually think the Seahawks are going to be good this year.
And he would be a good example of getting credit, right? He would get the credit.
Well, but the problem is they won 9 games last year, right?
So you'd have to be.
Based on, you have to, what's the average?
I mean, they'd have to win the NFC West, probably.
The number of wins for the team increased by an average of 5.5 from the prior year. So they would, most likely be under that.
You need minimum a 13-win Seahawks team that wins the NFC West.
So it's based on this anyway. It's not a good bet. Nor is Shane Steichen because the Colts won 9, right? So like, it's going to be tough for Mike McDonald and Shane Steichen to win this because of that.
And then I think if the Colts pull that off, then they're dominated the AFC South and they've got, 13, 14 wins, whatever, right? Like, then I want Anthony Richardson MVP at 30-1 at double the odds.
That's right. You don't want this.
Yeah, I don't want this.
So I think for coach specifically, because I don't think the Panthers are going to be that good. Understatement. I don't think Jonathan Gannon and the Cardinals are going to end up being that good. I do think, and I don't think Tennessee is. So I do think Cleve's Kevin O'Connell is a very smart play, and it's got the longest odds of any of them. But I do think that Dan Quinn at 18-1 is very interesting. And the other one would be the obvious one to me, which is Jim Harbaugh at 11-1. Jim Harbaugh, it's almost too obvious. They won 5 games last year. Season win total is 8.5. He's 11-1. There's no shame in 11-1. That's still a good number. Eberflus is the only one shorter. By the way, Robert Saleh is not winning. Like, if the Jets do well, is he getting credit?
Right, there's no way.
I mean,
that should have been the prime example I brought up. Yeah. Yes, he's not. It's all Aaron Rodgers' love at that point.
If the Bears do great, is Eberflus getting credit? Or is it the fact that they have Caleb Williams and a stacked team now for Caleb, as stacked as you can get for a rookie to play with? I just think it's Harbaugh because the perception with Harbaugh is You've lost Eckler. You've lost Keenan Allen. The perception will play in that Jim Harbaugh will get all the credit. I still think he's the best bet. And I don't disagree with the number and the play on Kevin O'Connell either, because if you think the Vikings are going to be good, that might be a better play. But I just think Harbaugh is the obvious play here.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think I'll be betting because I'm not that confident how great the Chargers are going to be.
Oh, see, I think their schedule is lined up for them. Yeah. And it's, I mean, they won 5 last year.
I know.
That's the thing.
I'm just saying, as far as quality of the team, I think it's next 2 seasons for where he makes a bigger impact. Yeah.
We got all year to banty it about. Soccer next, Euros, Copa America, and more with Paul Carr. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.